I'm Cyndi Lauper with fellow Cosentyx advocate, Chef Michelle Bernstein.
We'll share our experiences with plaque psoriasis, with psoriatic arthritis, and Dr. Panico will talk about the possible connection.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. It may lower your ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or cosentyx.com/Cyndi.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Head to White Castle for 12 crispy, all-white meat chicken rings for just $3.99. For a limited time, choose from Classic, Hidden Valley Ranch, or our new Smoky Barbecue flavor, and take home 12 chicken rings for just $3.99. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hi, I'm Josie. My daughter turns 5 today. I'm also an Ohio State Highway Patrol trooper. When you move over and slow down, you're making sure I can get home to celebrate with my daughter.
When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
NASA 557, contact tower
128.15. Caution. Caution. Manual. Fuel. Manual. Fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents, and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Welcome back to another edition of Flight Safety Detectives. I'm Miles O'Brien, joined today by Todd Curtis and the great John Golia, where we're going to talk about aviation, when things go wrong, and what we can learn from those incidents. And today we have a great example of the sleuthing prowess of Todd Curtis. We're going to harken back now to episode 193, and this was a discussion of an event that occurred February 6, 2020. In Johnson Valley, California, which is to say Class G country, in other words, uncontrolled airspace. This was a road rally, and it was being live streamed. Helicopters in the air, and in this case, what complicated matters, also at least one drone in the air. And what we witnessed and what was detailed in episode 193 was a collision between a Mavic drone and a helicopter. Nobody got hurt. The Mavic did not live to fly another day, but the helicopter got just kind of dinged. But there's a lot of lessons baked in this. Questions about the interface between drones and piloted aircraft, which is becoming more and more of an issue. The issue of helicopters pursuing a subject on the ground, whether it's for electronic news gathering or in this case, covering a sporting event and being focused on that, to the exclusion of see and avoid responsibilities as pilots. And also some questions here about integrating the drone community, that is to say, pilots who are flying on the ground and those who are in cockpits, and making sure everybody's on the same page before you try to do something like this. But before I bury the lead even further, Todd, let's go to what you've discovered upon closer viewing of the video, which, of course, we know there's video because there were cameras all over the place. And in this case, video from the Mavic drone is quite telling and perhaps initially misleading, as you discovered.
Well, for those of you who've been following us all these months and years, episode 193, as Miles stated, is where the first analysis was done between John and myself. And we assume that the NTSB information, there was quite a bit of information. There was an incident report, fairly detailed. There was a public docket, which had in it a video from the drone that collided with the helicopter. So there was actually a rich information source for this one. And in the NTSB analysis, and I'll read you the analysis right off. This is in the first page of the report. There's a line there. Review of video logs indicate the incident helicopter was clearly in view in the SUAS telemetry. However, the remote pilot continued to follow the race vehicle. The remote pilot did not use the service of a visual observer to assist with avoidance of other air traffic. The key phrase there was the incident helicopter was clearly in view. So we looked at the public docket, which had the full 39-second video clip from that drone. And in it, and we're playing this in the background for those of you watching the video version of this, you'll see on the right side a helicopter enter into the scene. You see in the foreground a off-road vehicle racing along a track, kicking up some dust. And the helicopter disappears from the scene. And a few seconds later, bang, you see a collision between the drone and the helicopter. Now, I'm going to put up here on the video a screen grab from the drone itself, the very last frame of video before the impact. You clearly see this is a helicopter, has two crew people in it, both wearing helmets. And the report said, hey, there were two people in the helicopter. So I thought, all right, this is what it should be. They said it was clearly in the scene. Then you run into the helicopter. The incident helicopter must have flown out of the scene, come back into the scene. And in fact, John and I made that assumption. Fast forward a couple of months. I'm using this accident report and the analysis John and I did as part of a class I'm teaching at Vaughan College in New York. And in the process of doing that, I had looked at this video, the 39-second video. I'd looked at it maybe a dozen times when we were putting the show together. I looked at it another 10 times trying to put the class together. One night, I'm looking at it, and I thought, what's that darn smudge on my TV screen here? I rubbed my computer. It's like, no, that's not a smudge. That's a shadow. And again, I have another video here, which I'm going to run in its entirety, where I basically point out where the shadow is. Gives you an idea of how difficult it is to see. So watch that video and we'll be right back.
Episode 193 was about a collision between a drone and a helicopter at a road racing event. One of the featured pieces of evidence was a video shot from the drone. In it, you see a helicopter on the right, a vehicle in the foreground, and the helicopter disappears from the screen and eventually hits the drone. As it turns out, upon further review, there seems to be a second shadow that enters from the left, hovers over the vehicle, exits again to the left before the collision occurs. For a variety of reasons we can go into later, I suspect that the second helicopter was the one that hit the drone, not the helicopter in the video. As you can see from the following video clip, the vehicle is traversing from left to right. The drone is tracking that video. You do see a helicopter on the right side of the video, and it eventually exits the screen. But about 10 seconds into this video, there's actually a shadow, which I believe is from the second helicopter, coming from the left, goes over toward the vehicle, and then exits again to the left before the collision. It's hard to see in the raw video, but this second clip has a red arrow over the approximate position of the shadow, and I think it's a whole lot easier to see. As a result of this evidence, I think that we should take a serious look at this event again and look through the NTSB information to see if there is even a hint of a second helicopter being in the area. If there wasn't, this could be a case where the NTSB, and us for that matter, missed a very obvious clue.
Okay, as you see, there's clearly something going on there. And I thought that given that during this video, this 39-second video, there was at least one point where I saw a shadow on the ground and a shadow under the first helicopter, that shadow could not have come from the first helicopter. Question is, what did it come from? This road race, the management of the race had a certificate from the FAA to clear the area of traffic except for the helicopters and drones who were shooting this road race. There are like five helicopters and four drones. So it's like, okay, it's either a helicopter or a drone. Given the size of the shadow, which is roughly the size of the vehicle, it can't be a drone. It can't be your 5, 10-pound, 4-pound, 2-pound drone. It has to be something bigger. I thought, all right, is it the helicopter that collided with the drone? First thing I did is I went and looked at the helicopters on the right-hand side. Remember, this is a video from the DJI drone. 60 frames per second. So every second there's 60 still photographs. So I thought, hey, let me take a chunk of video from the helicopter, just to zoom in on that, run it real slow, and see what happens. And as you see in this video here, we did it for both the shadow on the ground and the helicopter. The helicopter, once I ran the video like 25% or so, it was pretty clear that although I could not see any of the registration numbers, which is what I was looking for, and I even looked at, you know, a picture of that helicopter, compared it with a picture of the incident helicopter, see if the silhouettes were alike. There was similarity there, but not enough for me to say it's either a different helicopter or the same helicopter. But here's the thing. The model of the incident helicopter had three blades. When I slowed down this video of the first helicopter, clearly it's a two-bladed helicopter. So A, the NTSB, for whatever reason, mistook the helicopter in the video for the incident helicopter. It could not have been the incident helicopter. Incident helicopter was a three-bladed helicopter. This is two-bladed. Now, full disclosure, the NTSB said that no one traveled to the location for this investigation. So the investigator relied on information from the FAA, from the FISDO, whatever the case may be. It's unclear, looking at the documentation, whether or not the investigator interviewed the pilots that were involved, both the drone pilot and the helicopter pilot. The written documentation in the public docket, no one mentioned more than one helicopter. The accident, the pilot who was flying the drone, and the person in the helicopter, there's no indication there was a second helicopter there. Now, is it a helicopter? I zoomed in on that helicopter shadow, or what I thought was a helicopter shadow. It was going over rough ground, so it was kind of like, you know, kind of squirrely looking. But when I slowed it down, I slowed it down 25% and 10%. When I slowed it down to 25%, that was the clearest indication to me that whatever that shadow was acting like a helicopter. I saw what looked like shadows of a rotor going around. So I thought, all right, we have at least two helicopters. But here's the thing. There are five helicopters that were authorized to cover the race. The second helicopter that we see in the video hit the drone. We have identified that. The first helicopter we saw was not the second helicopter. I can't associate that shadow with the helicopter that hit the drone. Certainly, that shadow could not have been from the first helicopter because, like I said before, there was a point where both shadows were visible on the ground. So I can say this. The NTSB was incorrect when it said there was a helicopter and a drone. There had to be at least two helicopters in the vicinity. Now, I'm not here to knock the NTSB. It's one of those things where, hey, you know, John and I looked at this several times. I looked at it several more times. And I accidentally almost came across the fact that, hey, there's something that's squirrely about this. Let's investigate it. But let's put this in a broader context. And this is where I want the two of you to add things, because Miles, you have some unique experience. I looked at this after I did my analysis, and I thought, this reminds me of that 2007 event in Phoenix, which many of you probably seen at one point or another. There was some sort of officer-involved car chase on the ground, and there were a couple of news helicopters taking pictures of this. They ran into each other. Everyone on both helicopters were killed. There was a major investigation, and we have that investigation as one of the resources you can look at. But I thought, this is a similar situation. You have two vehicles flying, looking at the ground, at something racing along the ground. And for whatever reason, they were unable to see each other. In Phoenix, you had two helicopters. They're pretty big. You can be half mile away from each other, and the two helicopters, if they look in the right direction, they'll see each other. A drone? No way. Now, here's where, Miles, I'd like to have you chime in, because you have actually been in situations where you were in a helicopter amongst multiple helicopters looking at things on the ground. So,
yeah. So I've had, you know, over the course of my career as a television journalist, spent a lot of time in TV news, ENG, as they call them, electronic news gathering helicopters. And by the nature of what they do, they tend to cluster because there's an event, something's burning or whatever the case may be, or we're chasing something. And it is a very perilous thing. And the fact that there aren't more collisions is a testament to some really good piloting techniques, which have to be honored and obeyed every time. And, you know, John always says, keep your head at a swivel. This is one of those classic, that is a swivel moment if there ever was one, when you're orbiting an event like that. And, you know, clearly everybody needs to be on the same frequency, constantly talking to each other. Where are you? Where are you? When you don't see, you know, when you know you've got three targets around you and you're only seeing two, where's that missing one? Constant conversations. And frequently what I've experienced, the good pilots will do is they'll dedicate a layer of altitude for each craft. So you can, you know, have an inherent deconfliction as you go around. But, you know, when you've got a pilot who's focused on, you know, presumably eyes out the window, focused on maintaining, proper aviation techniques, and then somebody operating one of these gyroscopically stabilized cameras and maybe also reporting at the same time, your attention is distracted in any number of ways. So a lot of communication, a lot of constantly keeping your head in a swivel, a lot of remembering that if you lose track of a target, that's when you get in real trouble. And in this case with the drones, you know, this adds a whole new wrinkle to this endeavor, because more and more of these TV stations, for obvious reasons, expense and otherwise, are shifting into drones for this kind of coverage. And so you have both craft in close proximity. Drones are supposed to go no higher than 400 AGL, but that's, you know, in this case, technically helicopters should be a little higher, but they're going to be, you know, the drone might go a little higher, the helicopter a little lower, and you're going to be in conflict, as we see in this case. And I think it's really important that the pilot community, people on board these craft, embrace the drone community and connect with each other. I think there's a little bit of a difference, I suppose you might say that the pilots who are in the helicopters looking down on the drone people, but without that good communication, you're going to have trouble like this. So I think, you know, this is a reminder that the skies can be crowded around these events. Everybody's trying to get a job done. It can be done safely, but the coordination level the bar is very high. And to just kind of willy-nilly go into these things, you're going to have trouble. In this case, the aircraft that was actually struck, the pilot clearly never knew it, right? He would have reported it when he got back, but he got dinged by a little Mavic, which is a matter of ounces. I bet if he looked at his paint job right now, maybe he'd see some evidence of it. And maybe you should give him a call, Todd, figure out who it was. But it's a reminder of how important it is to stay attentive and communicate in those situations.
You read the report and you can see where they believe that. They had a pilot's meeting between the choppers.
Just the choppers.
Just
right?
The choppers.
Yeah.
Ignored the drone people.
Right.
So before they even got in the air, they were setting themselves up for an issue.
Right. Right.
And the drone pilots, although I have a commercial drone license myself, you can have only one person operating all three key roles, the person flying the drone, the pilot in command, and the visual observer. This is one person doing all three jobs, trying to fly the drone and observe what's going on. And by his own admission, he was 1,000 feet away from the action, which is so far away, it's difficult to see the drone at all. So even if you think the drone is in one position, it might be quite a distance away from it. You never know it. But more to the point, I wanted John to chime in on this because you've sat in the seat as a board member many times where you had issues come up where maybe after the fact it's like, ooh, maybe we should take a look at this. Now, in my opinion, I think that because of the fact that we have a second helicopter here and because there are obvious parallels of what happened back in 2007, that this is the kind of event that's ripe for a relook. Look at this again. See if there are additional issues, additional lessons learned that maybe the NTSB should do another report, an update of the report. But I want to get your opinion on that.
Well, I pushed for some reconsiderations right from the bench early on. And some I was successful with, some I wasn't. But it's sometimes like in times like now, resources are a big issue. The NTSB's budget has been level funded for several years at least. Level funding means no increase, but the salaries of personnel go up, your travel expenses, all the other expenses go up. So if you're level funded, you're actually going into the negative. And that's the place they are today with the budget process the way it is. So they would have great difficulty doing reconsiderations for all the reconsiderations that are requested. There's quite a few in there. So, they just don't have the money to do it all. They take their best shot at it. And you saw how much effort you put in. And I saw how much you put in. I only put a fraction of what you did. And, that would take a lot of man hours on the part of the NTSB, eating up a budget that they can't afford to do all the accidents, never mind come back and revisit them.
I've never been an NTSB investigator, and I don't have their skills, but hey, I've done some of the work for them, so they don't have to. It's like, look, just redo the analysis a little bit, saying, hey, there's a second helicopter. There might have been a third or a fourth or fifth. We don't know, but there's a shadow here. I'm not asking for much because...
Well, no, I think you've... It's a crucial point, but does it change the conclusion of the report? It doesn't change the finding. The finding here is there was not good communication. They weren't on frequency even. Certainly in this case, that would have been wise to have a VHF radio with the drone operator so they could at least hear the helicopters as they were no doubt interacting with each other on comms. They did not participate in the pre-race briefing. That's just astonishing to me. The idea that, a drone pilot who by statute under Part 107 is supposed to have a spotter and have visual contact with us, even if they did, and this is a stretch here, there is no way you can honestly say that is a true see and avoid capability, right? That's not real. So those findings will stand regardless. And I think those are really important ones that we really, aviation needs to take this stuff on board because the drone community is only going to grow. There's going to be more and more of these kinds of potential interactions.
I'd be satisfied with a simple rule saying, hey, if you're in a multiple helicopter/drone situation, you're the drone pilot, you see two helicopters chasing something, back away.
That would be, that would, anybody with any sense, well, any, yeah, put it this way, anybody who's flown in a helicopter or a plane would say, I got to get out of there because there's no way I can stay away from these people. So there is some, there's some additional blame, I think, on the part of the drone pilot in this case, because we don't have any documented. I mean, those helicopter pilots were going by the book, as best we could tell. Class G airspace, following a car race, deconflicting, talking on the VHF. The drone pilot, you know, 1,000 feet, that's not line of sight. Seeing a void, I mean, any hint of traffic, you're not supposed to be flying that drone. We know how that 107 rule goes. So, you know, that's, this is going to happen more and more. And I think the NTSB needs to stay on top of it.
Thank God there was no fatals.
Right.
That's all. Thank God. Yeah.
I mean, this could have gone into the intake. It could have caused all, I mean, it could have been, you know, hitting the side of the aircraft is one thing. If it gets sucked into something, critical, then, and that helicopter is going down, that would have been horrific.
Well, the bigger problem has been with the drone above the helicopter gets thrown down by the rotors, and right, now it accelerates at a great increase in speed and crashes right into the windshield. God,
yeah.
And we've had quite a few of those, and that's a big problem because glass in the eyes or plexiglass in the eyes of the pilot. Not, yeah, and maybe injury from the mass of the, even though they only weigh a few ounces, you get that going quite fast. That's the potential for severe injury is very real.
And by the way, under Part 107, your drone can be as heavy as 55 pounds.
Well, it's, you know, that's a scary thought. And if you're 55 pounds, maybe you ought to have ADS-B, you know, or some capability for the craft to see you. I mean, you know, they're pretty darn stealthy, as we well know, right? That little Mavic is a lot less than 55 pounds, but it could cause it could cause a fatality very easily if it went into the wrong place. There's no question about that. And you can't see them. There's no question about that.
Right. You know, and you raise a good point about ADS-B. Last year at Oshkosh, I had a long conversation with a firm that has a ADS-B in and out, mainly out, but it does record the in. It only weighs a few ounces.
Well,
very, very low power draw.
Maybe in a scenario like this, where you have a commercial enterprise, there's money to be made, et cetera. It's a live streamed event. That could be a requirement. I mean, obviously, it's going to add to the cost of the drone and et cetera, but this is, you know, for safety of flight, maybe that would do it. I don't know a lot of helicopter pilots who are, you know, focused on their ADS-B so much. They're mostly just see and avoid guys looking out the window. But there's got to be, I think there's, we have, aviation needs to come up with a solution for this, because this is going to continue.
Yeah, so they got a license to operate 5 helicopters in this area, and they're all single pilot.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with that, too.
Yeah.
And the second person in the helicopter was a spotter on
every
film.
Yeah, imagine that, a spotter on every helicopter, not assigned to film, not assigned to commentate, just to do the John Golia, put the head on the swivel guy. That might have solved some problems, because they might have caught a glint of that little Mavic nearby, and that might have said, hey, we got trouble here at 6 o'clock.
Right. Well, lack of coordination and lack of resources, and another pilot, ADS-B, including the drone pilots in the briefing.
Yeah.
So they could hear it, you know, could have a give and take between the helicopters and the drone operator. Yeah. It's just so many disconnects in this particular accident. And again, thank God we don't have any fatals. So, it should be a lesson learned, and you know, Wide World of Sports ought to be looking at this and making a contract requirement that they pay attention to this, because drones are going to be used more and more in these racing scenarios, because yeah, they're down low, get good photos. You know, you can see the driver manipulating the controls, so it gets you closer to the action as a viewer. And that drives viewership, which is what they want.
Well, you know, it goes back to what I was saying about those days when I was circling around incidents in news helicopters, strict altitude assignments. You know, you say to tell the drone guy you're not going above 300, period, or whatever it may be. And but all those things require a little bit of thought and ahead of the game. And, you know, like as we say here, we have, you know, a case here. We have a destroyed drone and some dinged paint that they didn't even notice on the helicopter. Thank God for that. But this is there's a lesson here. There's a little bit of a warning sign here for aviation and these specific types of events to pay attention to this kind of thing.
I'm surprised the drone was able to get in underneath the or through the prop wash, because the helicopter downward prop wash is rather severe.
I don't know which way they were coming out at the geometry. I'm not clear of, but I gotta say, Todd, I give you a lot of credit for figuring that one out. That was some good sleuthing.
It was several cups of coffee late at night trying to figure that one out. How to do it in such a way that it's easily explained to someone just looking at a 1 minute video, but oh yeah, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Well, and this is like a perfect segue into my second to last word. It's like what John was saying. Everything we've done here in the show, everything I've done to figure out what was going on, may not move the needle with respect to changing what the report says or having another investigation. But that's okay. Because my message is to all you folks out there who, unlike in 2007 when that helicopters hit each other in Phoenix, we now have full up internet. We now have global connections. We now have in our hands and laptops the ability to do these kinds of analyses and more. And yeah, some of you do that thinking, oh, I found, you know, a conspiracy here. Okay, let's put the conspiracies on the side. If you see that people in the business like us or the NTSB or the Canadian and British version may have missed something, make a video, make a podcast. Will it change things? Maybe. But part of the responsibility we have in this world, even if you're not a professional aviator, is the system improves because of the combined effort of hundreds of thousands of people, most of whom you'll never hear of, few of whom have access to a venue where they have somewhat of an audience. Even if you have an audience of one or two, make a video, make a podcast, write a letter, complain to your congressperson, complain to the NTSB. If you see something that should be changed, do something about it.
Good last words. What do you got, John?
And we know that many people at the NTSB and the FAA watch this podcast. So maybe this will trigger a little something within the government to take a look.
I think that's a good idea.
Again, in all my closings, because it's still relevant today, and I wish we could get to a point where I don't have to say this, but if you're going to go flying, do a very thorough session of pre-planning. Do it before you go to the airport. Do it again at the airport. When you go out to your airplane, do a very thorough pre-flight. Even if you just came in an hour before and now you're going out for a second trip of the day, do a good pre-flight again. And then once you get in the air, put your head on the swivel. It may have avoided this little ding in the helicopter if they had somebody paying attention to the airspace around the helicopter. So please, please fly safely.
And if you're a drone pilot, that goes for you too. If you see helicopters in the area, just land. And if you're in a situation where you know you're going to be flying with them in this specific case we just discussed, by all means, be connected on the radio, have a discussion with the pilots, understand altitude limitations, the rules of the, not the road, but above the road in this case. And beyond that, I don't want to drone on any further. That's it.
Play on words.
That's it. For this edition of Flight Safety Detectives, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for checking out our show. We really value our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you and how much you like it. So please give us 5 stars in your podcast platform.
We want to keep in contact with you. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're on YouTube, we're really working on growing the channel, and it helps if you all send in comments. Please do that, and we read all the comments.
and be sure to subscribe. Remember, if you're in the market for aviation insurance, you can save 5% with Avemco just by mentioning our show. Visit them at www.avemco.com. That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detective. Until the next episode, fly safe.
I'm Cindy Lauper with fellow Cosentyx advocate, Chef Michelle Bernstein.
We'll share our experiences with plaque psoriasis, with psoriatic arthritis, and Dr. Panico will talk about the possible connection.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB, serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. It may lower your ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or cosentyx.com/Cindy.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Head to White Castle for 12 crispy, all-white meat chicken rings for just $3.99. For a limited time, choose from Classic, Hidden Valley Ranch, or our new Smoky Barbecue flavor, and take home 12 chicken rings for just $3.99. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hi, I'm Josie. My daughter turns 5 today. I'm also an Ohio State Highway Patrol trooper. When you move over and slow down, you're making sure I can get home to celebrate with my daughter.
When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
Hey, parents. Green light is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a green light debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.